May the Spirit of life be with us this day and every day. Amen. Blessed be. Let me start with a story this morning, a universal story. Two children, siblings, friends, doesn't matter. Two children in the back seat of the car, sitting on the couch or playing outside, whatever, and there's a howl. Dad! What? She hit me. He hit me first. Like I said, a universal story. Any of you ever experienced anything like this? When you were children, perhaps, or your own children? He hit me first. I want to talk this morning about violence and peace and forgiveness and revenge, justice and mercy. I offer to us an invitation to forgiveness, an invitation to peace. There's no season of the year where this is an inappropriate topic, but today seemed like a particularly good day to offer this message. Tomorrow, the 21st of September, is the International Day of Peace. It's only a 33-year-old tradition, time to be near the opening day of the new session of the United Nations General Assembly, when world leaders gather in New York to talk about our broken and beautiful world. Thanks mostly to the commitment of Jim and Pam Keeling, the International Day of Peace is a real thing here in Rockford, with events and programs to mark the occasions and things for kids. Tomorrow, the 21st of September, is also Erev Yom Kippur, and the next day at sundown begins the Jewish holy day, Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. Last week was Rosh Hashanah, the new year, and on Rosh Hashanah, the Book of Life is for the new year is opened, and you resolve yourself to live well and justly in harmony with the ways of the Lord. But before you can do that, you have to make atonement, make amends, and ask for forgiveness on Erev Yom Kippur from other people whom over the year you may have harmed, and on Yom Kippur from the holy for those mistakes and errors which all people sometimes make. Peace, atonement, forgiveness, new beginnings. She hit me. He hit me first. The cycle of violence is ingrained in us. It's natural, actually. We strike back. Evolutionarily, it isn't hard to see how this response is encoded into our genes. Those who can't fight for themselves or persuade someone else to do it for them are vulnerable to the greedy and the mad. To protect one's body and children and home and safety and loved ones, we're hardwired to hit back. Hardwired to do it. But of course, there's a problem, that the cycle of violence of hitting back war over and over again leads to disaster. An eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind, as Gandhi said. The ancient Jewish rule, an eye for an eye, was actually an improvement on the situation. You could take an eye for an eye, but that was it. You couldn't take a head for a finger. It was about making the response proportional so that the cycle could end. Say, we're even. No more. Otherwise, right, the violence just escalates and goes on forever until both groups are wiped out. The Hatfields and the McCoys, right? Did you know, I looked this up, I didn't know much about their story, so I thought of that and I looked it up, and that the Hatfield and the McCoy feud may have begun when one of the McCoys, who had fought in the Union Army in the Civil War, was murdered by a Hatfield for his disloyalty. The Hatfields were supporters of the Confederacy, as were most of the McCoys, actually. It was just this one guy who had fought on the other side. He'd married a woman whose family were Union supporters, see, and that was how it started. Violence leads to violence. And it goes on and on unless something intervenes. Forgiveness, reconciliation, a decision to let the past go and move forward. Our ancestors learned this genetic lesson. If you don't fight back at all, your genes will be wiped out. If you fight back forever without stopping, your genes will be wiped out. Truth be told, the Hatfield-McCoy story is kind of weird. I don't know enough of the history of the West Virginia-Kentucky border in the late 1800s to understand the story, but the legend seems to be that the Union soldier, Asa Harmon McCoy, tried to hide in a cave in those hills, but the Confederate militia tracked him down January 1865. by following the footsteps in the snow of Pete, an enslaved African, Asa Harmon McCoy's slave. So yes, Harmon McCoy, a Union soldier, owned a slave. Something weird about this story, like I said. What I couldn't find out in my amateur research was what happened to Pete, the enslaved African. Was he killed too? Was he taken by the Hatfields? What happened to him 5 months later when the Confederacy lost the war? Did he go north? Or did he try to find his family wherever they might be? Did he wind up becoming a sharecropper, still enslaved in all but name? What happened to Pete? See, this is the catch about forgiveness and peace. Whose story doesn't get told? Whom atones to whom? After the Civil War, leaders in the North decided to treat the South pretty gently. Oh, the radical Republicans wanted to stick it to the South, so they got the 13th and 14th and 15th Amendments through. You know, the ones that say that if you're a citizen, you have rights no matter what, no matter what, no matter what. But 12 years after the war was over, the North had had enough. The war was over, let's move on, we got to do business. We need our cheap cotton again. Forgive and forget. What happened to Pete? Not good, I'll tell you. Millions of Petes, formerly enslaved Africans, as soon as Reconstruction was over, were treated like property instead of people again. Denied the right to vote or be educated or move freely. Jim Crow and lynching and the Klan on the rise. The Northern capitalists forgave the South for the war, but neither the South nor the North, both of whom profited from cheap labor of both slavery and Jim Crow, have ever made real atonement or sought genuine forgiveness for these crimes. Who gets to forgive? What atonement is required first? There's a false peace and there's a real peace. Peace is more than the absence of tension. It is safe havens for all. You've heard the chant, maybe you've even chanted it, no justice, no peace. You can spell it N-O or K-N-O-W. It works either way. No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. Without atonement, saying I or we have committed a grave error and we will make amends in this very particular way, without that, it's hard to have real forgiveness, and there can be no real peace. This is important, not just for nation states, for people. If someone tells you to forgive your abuser, but the abuser has made no change in their action, if they keep hitting you, don't forgive them. Get out. Get help and get safe. Come to me and we'll call the police together and get you safe. The concept of forgiveness, the concept of peace, can be used as a kind of weapon, a cudgel. When civil rights leaders sat at lunch counters or marched or tried to register voters, they were charged with disturbing the peace, which they were. Some folks have told the Black Lives Matter to be more like Dr. King, be more peaceful, which is tragically hilarious since King was considered a dangerous criminal by most Americans while he was alive and wiretapped by the FBI and accused constantly of being an outside agitator. We must have peace, we think. So therefore we say the aggrieved must forgive those who have done them harm. Otherwise the violence will just continue, we think. Forgive them, for they know not what they do. But what about when they do know what they're doing? And they keep doing it. No justice, no peace. On Erev Yom Kippur, you go to the people you have harmed and ask forgiveness. You can't come to Yom Kippur and ask God for forgiveness until you've gone to the people on the day before Yom Kippur. There's no shortcut around atonement. No shortcut to justice. Almost every conflict in the world today is the consequence of some injustice for which there was no remedy, no atonement, no repair. In 1953, the British and American governments overthrew the democratically elected government of Iran and installed a military government so that we would have access to their oil. That's what happened in 1953. That repressive military government tortured its citizens until it was overthrown in a religious revolution in 1979. No amends or atonement has ever really been made. Today, U.S. senators and presidential candidates speak of fomenting another regime change. There's a reason they don't trust us. Real peace requires seeing another person's point of view. We're called to real peace, which requires atonement, not just forgiveness, not just apology, but justice. Now, we also all know folks who carry a grudge even when genuine atonement has been made and justice has been served, and yet they remain bitter and ready to strike again, unwilling to give up the injury and to move on. This is, I will tell you, not spiritually recommended. Holding on to pain for pain's sake is not helpful. It can give us a sense of identity. We are the wounded, we are the betrayed, but it is not good for the soul. There's a difference between bitterness on one hand and a longing for justice on the other. These are not the same things. And there's a kind of forgiveness that is needed to let go of the illusion that we can change the past, to let go of our carefully nurtured resentment, so that we can actually do the work of building a world with both peace and justice. The invitation to forgiveness and peace is not an invitation to lay down and take it, but it is an invitation to rise up and get to work, to not be bound by the past, to cross borders and make connections. There's a kind of forgiveness that's about deciding that the person who harmed you doesn't get to stay in your soul space anymore, in your heart and mind. A kind of forgiveness that's about evicting the unwelcome tenant residing in your memory. But forgiveness cannot be coerced. It can only be freely given. Peace cannot be imposed by the stifling of dissent, but only created and sustained by ongoing justice and mutuality. The invitation to forgiveness and peace that I offer today, then, is an invitation to justice and atonement. If you have participated in systems of injustice, and since you live in this country, you have, we all have, in what way will you try to make amends and make justice? If you've been harmed by others, and since you're a human being, the chances are pretty good that you have, will you insist on atonement, or at least on your safety, and then let go of the past for a better future? Atonement, peace, forgiveness, and justice are hard things to make happen. Yom Kippur comes every year, not just every once in a while. We need regular reminders to let a healing voice be heard, to invite it in, to hear and answer the invitation to a better life and a better world. And we need atonement and justice and forgiveness so that we will have peace. Some would carry a grudge forever and live in a world of perpetual war. Some folks seem to want that. How can we possibly make peace with Iranians or anyone else? It's outrageous, some say. But how many bodies must bleed out in the desert before we turn away from war? I wonder. Assalamu alaikum. May peace be upon you. Shalom. Peace. Of course, the words for peace in Arabic and in Hebrew are so close. Salam, shalom. The languages and the people share a common history, and I pray a common future. Peace, atonement, forgiveness, justice, it's necessary to prevent further bloodshed. It's wise for the safety of the world and for the promotion of human flourishing. But for we who ground ourselves in the spiritual life, there's a deeper reason why we are called to answer the invitation to atonement and the life of peace, a deeper feeling, a stronger truth. Love. Because we love one another. Because under all our differences, we are kin. Because we make the choice based on our faith, our confidence in the deep integrity of each person, no matter what, no matter what, to love them. We might insist on them changing behavior, we might establish life-saving boundaries, but we make the choice to love them, to love each and every person. This is why we seek peace and justice, and why we atone for our mistakes, and why we forgive others for theirs, because we love them. No, David, no, no, stop. Time out, David. Yes, yes, I do love you. Still. That love isn't just for our children or our tribe. The work of our universalist faith is to expand the circle, to remember that our children means every child, that our tribe includes every person in every land. Love, kinship. Other hearts in other lands are beating with hopes and dreams as high and true as mine. Love. It's the reason that we atone and forgive, and it is the reward, too. It's what we get. More than peace or safety or even justice, love is what comes from deciding to fix the wrongs and let go of the pain and live together in beauty, in hope, and in harmony. May it be so. Let's sing together. Please rise in body or spirit. Please be seated. It's been wonderful to be together for worship this morning. In your bulletin, you'll find a whole set of announcements and events that are coming up. And particularly, I want to highlight this Wednesday is our next Wonderful Wednesday program. It's a book discussion of the book Lamb by Christopher Moore. And it's not too late to pick up the book and join us for a meal if you wish in the program at 6. I'll be leading the book discussion then. And we've also got all sorts of other events and programs on the table, spirit journey groups, anti-racism course we're doing in October and November, and a few other things as well, so check that out. In a moment, we'll take up an offering to support the work of justice and mercy in the world. 80% of what we collect today will go to support the work of Alignment Rockford. That's an organization working to align community resources, nonprofits, and businesses, and others with the goals of the Rockford School District. We made a decision years ago to put a lot of our energy into supporting the work of transforming our schools into a place of justice and opportunity for everyone. And I'm incredibly proud of the work that Alignment Rockford has done to achieve those ends. Some of the funding streams that started them going have ended. And so now they're looking to build more broad community support for their work. And I trust them and support them and hope you will do the same. If today was your first day with us, we are so glad that you are here this morning, or your first day in a long time. We're glad to have you back. I hope you checked in at the guest table so we can be in touch about what's coming up in the life of the church. And we'd love to see you all next week when I will be preaching again about the invitation to intercultural competence. And if you wonder what that is or how you might get it, I will be talking about that and a few other things. So please come and bring somebody along that you know who might be interested as well. The offering will now be given and received. I'll extinguish our chalice, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These things we carry with us until we are together again. I invite you to rise in body or spirit and join hands or stand next to the people next to you for our benedictions. The words for our benediction from Project Plowshares. Lead me from death to life, from falsehood to truth. Lead me from despair to hope, from fear to trust. Lead me from hate to love, from war to peace. Let peace fill our hearts, our world, our universe. We'll sing together our sung blessing. We'll sing it through twice.